Chapter 12. When I awoke the next morning, I was in my bed alone. I sat up and looked around the room, but Linnea was nowhere to be found. Was last night a dream? I'd had some pretty intense dreams before, but that one would have been a whole new experience. The scales, the water, her warm pussy. I glanced over at the air station, and I saw her blue top floating around the tube. Okay, so not a dream, but where did she go? I pulled myself up from the bed and looked around for my clothes, and I noticed a fresh tunic and trousers were laying on the dresser with a rock holding them down. I picked up the rock, grabbed the clothes, and caught a piece of parchment as it floated up from the dresser, and the words were scrawled in loopy handwriting that nearly filled the page. Thank you again. I chuckled at Linnea's note as I pulled my clothes on and kicked my way out the door into the hall. One of the other doors was already open, but the rest of my companions seemed to still be asleep. Considering the Duke wanted to be on the hunt bright and early, though, I figured I'd better wake everyone up. He was determined to catch the fisherman today, and none of us would be the ones to slow him down. I swam down the hall and knocked on each of the doors. "Time to get up," I called out as the doors began to open. Trina groaned as she slumped against the threshold to her room.
It's so early.
We have a hunt today. Chop chop.
Ooh, yes, a hunt.
Aaliyah growled as she breezed out of her room while she tied the belt of her robe around her narrow waist.
Let's do it.
I caught a glimpse of her bronze-toned body before she finished closing her robe, and a growl escaped my lips before I shook my head to focus on the day. Let's eat. I rumbled and adjusted my pants with a sigh. I turned and headed for the stairs as the rest of the doors started to open behind me. I paddled downstairs toward the dining hall and found Linnea sitting at the table with Phineas and Helmy. And she looked up at me and waggled her eyebrows as I made my way to the table.
"Good morning, Lord Evan,"
Linnea said in an overly sweet voice. "Good morning," I replied with raised eyebrows. "How are you feeling?"
"Much better today,"
she answered as she covered her smile with a dainty hand.
"Thank you, for asking."
"Of course." I took a dramatic bow before I paddled over to the table and sat down. She clearly didn't want the Duke and Duchess to know that I'd fucked her brains out and filled her up half a dozen times with my cum, but I didn't mind our fun little secret.
"Ah, are your people ready for the search today?"
Phineas asked after he glanced back and forth between Linnea and me. "Yeah, they're just getting dressed," I confirmed as Aaliyah and Rebecca glided into the room. "There's the first round right there, my hunting ladies."
"You hunt?"
Phineas asked them in surprise, and then glanced at me.
"And you allow this?"
"Of course,"
Aaliyah purred and showed off her elongated claws.
"The lionesses are the queens of the savannah. We catch all the food for our pride.
And I spent many years fending for myself,"
Rebecca added.
"So I learned how to hunt a long time ago."
"Interesting,"
Helmy murmured as she scrunched her nose up.
"I believe queens should sit on the throne for her people to adore her."
"A true queen does whatever is necessary for the good of her people,"
Robbie chirped as she fluttered into the room with Aliona and Mariah right behind her.
"The throne is merely a place to take a breath,"
Aliona chimed in with a smile. "And I have the best women by my side for hunting, breathing, and every other activity," I added with a wink.
"We love all the activities,"
Polina giggled as she licked her lips in an over-exaggerated fashion, and her sisters twittered along behind her before they sat down in the enchanted chairs.
"Oh!"
Helmy gasped and put a hand to her chest.
"It seems the landwalking women are more brazen than you're used to,"
Phineas chuckled.
"Your sisters would fit right in."
"Indeed,"
the Duchess scoffed.
"I told them to give us space while we figure out what to do about this fisherman character. I don't want them getting involved or being a distraction."
The mermaid leader glared at me like a disapproving teacher, and I offered her a Cheshire Cat grin in return. I wouldn't mind the mermaid sisters' distractions, and I wondered what the Duchess would think if she knew about my wild night with Linnea. The mermaids were certainly an interesting bunch of ladies. "Do any of your guards have experience fighting a mage?" I directed the conversation back to the search.
"Fighting, not exactly," Phineas murmured. "But I have a few who can wield water magic." We should put one of them into every group, Nike suggested, and I looked up to see the noble enter the room behind Laika and Naomi. That would give each group a helping hand until the rest of us can join them. I agree, I nodded. We can't leave any groups without some kind of magic. The fisherman is powerful, and he won't hesitate to use his magic against everyone else. Okay, I'll round them up, Phineas agreed, as he paddled toward the front door. Just then, the staff entered the dining room with large bowls, and I craned my neck to see what was inside.
I told them to try something new,
Linnea giggled.
I'm sure you were all tired of fish.
Thank the gods,
Aaliyah growled and looked for her fork with an excited grin.
So, what is it?
Fried octopus legs with seaweed wrap,
the mermaid replied with a grin.
Ah, great,
the lioness grumbled as she pulled one of the long legs from the bowl and took a bite. But then she looked up in surprise.
Actually, yeah, pretty great.
Really?
Ravi asked and grabbed a leg of her own. Everyone chowed down on the octopus legs with matching looks of surprised pleasure, so I decided to give it a shot. I bit through the soft seaweed and the crunchy shell to the tender meat inside. I'd imagined the octopus to be slimy, but it had the consistency of chicken, and the flavor was like nothing I'd ever tasted before. The meat practically melted on my tongue, and I savored the mixture of salt water, herbs, and spices in the crunchy fried shell. Wow, I finally said when I swallowed the bite. Surprisingly delicious.
Told ya,
Linnea replied with a wink.
It's always good to try new things, right?
Absolutely, I chuckled. We finished the meal as Phineas swam back into the dining hall.
Okay, I have 6 of our magical guards and 12 non-magical guards on standby outside, he announced. I also have a few options for where the fisherman could be hiding, if he isn't at home.
Let's see him, I replied. Phineas nodded and rolled a map out on the table where we could see it. Then he pointed to 5 locations on the parchment, each near the edge of the city on the north, south, and west ends.
These are older buildings that aren't used anymore, and that we never checked out in our first search, the Duke explained. I wouldn't be surprised if no one has been out there in years.
Which would make them great hiding places for someone who wants to be in town but not seen, I murmured.
What are you going to do once you find him?
Helmy asked in a worried tone. First, we need to capture him, I answered, before the Duke could. We need to know what he knows about the sect and their plans here. Then he's subject to the laws of your city.
Perfect.
A grin stretched across Phineas's cocoa-colored face.
I say we split into 3 groups. This building on the west side of Pullis is large and will take a while to search. But these other 4 are small enough that each group could search both.
Works for me, I agreed with a shrug. You know the city much better than we do. Nike, go ahead and divvy us up. My fellow noble nodded and divided us into groups. The Dryads and Ravi headed for the west end of the city with several guards, while Rebecca, Aaliyah, Naomi, and Nike set off for the north buildings. Aliona, Mariah, Laika, and I joined the Duke's group and a couple guards, and we prepared to head south.
I'll stay here with Linnea,
the Duchess offered.
And I'll make sure my sisters don't try to go joining any battles.
Good idea, Phineas chuckled. We'll be back soon enough.
Be careful,
she murmured, as he kissed the top of her head. Phineas nodded and he turned to usher everyone out the door.
Let's go get this bastard!
I couldn't agree more, and we swam outside to split off into our various directions. As we paddled south, I noticed one of the guards creating water orbs in his palms and popping them, like he had to keep his hands busy. His hair was the color of a yellow highlighter, and it was twisted into several braids that fell halfway down his back. The bright color contrasted deeply with his dark chocolate skin, and his face was twisted into an anxious grimace.
So you're the water magic merman for our group, huh? I asked with a raised eyebrow.
Yeah,
he replied, and twisted one of the braids of his bright yellow hair around his finger.
I'm a ball of nerves today. I'm not sure why. I mean, I don't really do all the guard stuff anymore, but I've never minded it. I'm just anxious, I suppose.
You're probably preparing for fatherhood, Theo,
Phineas offered with a laugh and patted him on the shoulder.
The day is coming soon, right?
Yeah, a couple of weeks, the guard replied.
Oh, are you Anja's husband?
Aliona wondered.
You met Anja,
Theo's eyes widened in surprise, and then worry flitted over his dark features.
"She didn't come into the water, did she?"
"No, we met her at the tower,"
the princess answered quickly.
"She was very kind to us."
"I'm sure it helped that Lord Evan saved her from a wraith,"
Lyca pointed out with a smirk.
"A wraith?"
Theo gasped and looked ready to faint.
"I thought she was safe inside the tower."
"Well, the wraith tricked her into coming down the beach," I explained. "It took the form of a child, and she was trying to help him. Anyway, it's all good now, don't worry. She's safe, the baby's safe, and she helped us get in touch with Helmy so we could come down here."
"Goddess, I hate being so far away from her," Theo groaned. "Being one of the magical people here makes it so hard to get away from work. It seems like there's always something I'm needed for. And who am I to turn down the entire city to go sit with my wife?"
Well, great. Now I felt better about this guy. He was clearly distraught about leaving Anja on land by herself and not a deadbeat dad at all. "She's a pretty tough cookie," I assured him. "Plus, she has Galloway up there to keep her safe. He's kind of a prick, but he knows what he's doing."
"Yeah, you're probably right," he murmured. "Just a few more days, and then I'll be up there with her."
"At least yours is almost here," I chuckled, as I thought about how much longer it would be until Mona gave birth. "I have an egg that refuses to hatch, and a centaur dragon baby that still has a few more months to bake."
"Centaur dragon?"
Theo's face paled with shock.
"You were able to mate with a centaur?"
"Yeah," I replied with a shrug. "It's a girl."
And you know the sex?" the merman gasped. "My wife hates my magic. She won't let me use it for anything with the baby, even though it would tell us what we are having."
"Well, we kind of planned for a girl," I explained. "With magic, of course. But yeah, Anja didn't seem too thrilled about any magic when we talked to her, either."
"And this whole fisherman nonsense won't make it any easier,"
Theo sighed, and put his hand to his forehead.
"She'll hate it even more."
"Unless your child is born with magic,"
Aliona pointed out.
"She may not harbor negative feelings then."
"That's a possibility?"
the merman asked, and a smile lit up his face.
"Yes, of course,"
the princess answered.
"Some of your magic can carry over to your child in your blood."
"There's hope,"
he chuckled, and formed another water orb in his hands. It seemed the merpeople didn't know very much about their magic, and I wondered if Aliona had any books that would help them learn more about how to control it. They needed every chance they could get to defend themselves, especially since they'd become targets of the Green Glass sect. I made a mental note to mention it to her later, and I chuckled to myself at the idea of the princess giving up one of her precious books. I had no doubt that she would do it for a good cause, but she was also very attached to them. A few minutes later, we arrived at the first building, which looked to be a deserted clinic of some sort. It had a faded sign above the door that was hanging by a thread, and I could see a desk and chairs for a waiting room inside the window. A handful of medical tools were spread out behind the desk, though it all looked untouched for quite some time.
"It should be open," Phineas murmured as he twisted the knob.
The door opened easily, though a loud creak echoed around the first room, and we followed the Duke inside to see a wide room with two long hallways off the back wall with multiple doors on either side.
"We'll take the left, you take the right," I said quietly to the Duke.
He nodded in agreement, and we split down each hall. I threw open each door to find empty, algae-filled rooms. It seemed algae was the underwater version of dust, and it grew in lush patches all over the walls and tables inside. Not even a fish fluttered in any of the open spaces, and we reached the end of the hall where another hall jutted across to meet up with the Duke and his guards.
"Nothing,"
Phineas grunted. "Nothing," I agreed with a frown. "Next place?"
"Let's go," he muttered.
The Duke really wanted to find the fisherman, and I didn't blame him. If it turned out the guy killed his best friend, I didn't mind letting him slaughter the mage. I only wanted the information first. Then Phineas could do whatever he wanted to the slimy bastard. We swam back down the hallway to the waiting area and out of the front door. Then we followed the Duke for a few blocks of silence until we reached what appeared to be an old warehouse, and the building stood about 2 stories tall with shuttered windows on each level. I tried to peek in between the slats of wood, but there was no light inside to see anything. Phineas swam forward and pushed down on the handle, but the door stayed closed. He frowned and then kicked his fin to plow shoulder first into the door. It burst open with a loud pop, and we scurried inside just as someone rushed away from the door. "There!" I called out, and conjured a fireball to light the room. As soon as the flames rose in my palm, I could see the fisherman's black fin paddling hard in the water to escape. Then he glanced over his shoulder and murmured a few words. Suddenly, a current took hold underneath us and sent us all spinning and flipping around in the water. The mermen caught their balance quickly and started after the fishermen again, while the rest of us had to grab onto the various machinery in the old factory. Once my companions and I reoriented ourselves, we rushed after the others in a whirlwind of water and fire. We dipped and dodged the orbs the fisherman threw over his shoulder, but one of the water balls clipped a guard, and he fell to the side from the stunning blow. I shot a layer of my web magic at the fisherman's tail, but the webbing moved so slowly in the water that it opened and drifted to the floor without doing any damage. Shit. I conjured a watery bow and arrow next, but it was hard to get a grip on the arrow and swim forward at the same time, so I had to reach him first. We'd nearly caught the bastard when he raised his arm with his finger pointed outward, and I knew he was trying to open another portal. "No!" I called out and launched a water dagger at his arm. The blade sailed across the space between us and plunged into his forearm, and the fisherman howled with pain as he clutched his arm to his chest. He turned and gave me a menacing glare before he mumbled another quick spell. Then a powerful burst of water exploded against my chest, and it felt like 1,000 tiny needles poked into my skin. The pokes felt more like leeches sucking the life out of me, and I took in a sharp breath as the fisherman grinned and paddled up high above us. What the fuck was this spell? I shuddered through another breath and conjured a water ball before I launched it at the mage. As soon as the orb collided with his skinny form, the pinpricks slowed, but I could still feel them sucking away at my body. Then Mariah seemed to appear out of nowhere as she sucker-punched the fisherman, and his face registered his surprise. The needling spell stopped completely. It seemed her lessons with the rest of my warriors had done her some good.
"Wait!"
Aliona called out as the mermen guards sent their spears flying through the water toward the fisherman. We didn't want him to die just yet, so I pushed the spears off course with a wave that sent the spears crashing into the wall, and Theo turned to look at me with shock on his face.
"We can't kill him yet! Just knock him out or something!"
"Okay," he agreed, and conjured his own water magic. Then he shoved his palms forward, and a wave of water crashed into the fisherman and sent him tumbling backward until he hit the sandstone wall of the warehouse.
"Keep going!"
I called out, as I also sent a matching wave to slam into the fisherman's weakening body. Theo and I took turns smashing the fisherman with wave after wave of heavy water until he collapsed against the wall and floated in an unconscious heap of black scales and scrawny arms. I grabbed a chair from behind one of the workstations and held it in front of the Duke.
"I assume you don't want to take him back to the castle," I said to Phineas.
"No, the Duchess doesn't need to see any of this," he murmured.
I nodded and looked at the chair in my hands for a long moment.
"Would you like me to enchant it?" Theo asked with a mischievous grin.
"If you wouldn't mind." I smirked as I held the chair out to him before I turned to the other guards.
"Go to the other groups and tell them to come here."
Theo whispered a few words and the chair suddenly sunk down to the floor. Then two of the other guards grabbed the fisherman's arms, tugged him toward the chair, and headed for the door to bring the rest of my group here. Aliona murmured a quiet spell, and white coils of her magic wrapped around his limp body and bound him to the chair. The merman's wiry frame was held tightly to the wood, and the princess tapped her finger on her cheek before she twirled it around to send another magical rope around his tail. As soon as she squeezed his tail to the chair, the merman came to and tugged at his bindings.
"No!"
he groaned as he fell back limp.
"I'm dead!"
"Not yet," I smirked. "And if you're worried about the sect, I'll help you with that." Mariah jumped into my spiritual sea in a flash, and I pulled the sword of Hatra out from my belt.
"It's on his back,"
Lyca announced from behind the merman.
"Huh. That's why I didn't see it before," I chuckled. "Clever, but it'll be gone soon enough."
"What are we talking about?" Phineas wondered.
"The tattoo that all sect members have," I replied, as I paddled behind the merman's chair. "It's made with cursed ink, so if they're captured or start to tell their secrets, the sage can kill them." I pressed the tip of the blade against the familiar green leaf tattooed on the fisherman's back, and Mariah's power warmed the handle under my skin. Then we combined our magic to pull the cursed ink out of the merman's skin, and the glowing green ink slowly disappeared to reveal a simple black tattoo.
"You have no idea what you've done," he muttered as his head dropped to his chest.
"I've given you the opportunity to tell us what you know without dying a gruesome death by your leader," I retorted. "Or you can die a gruesome death at our hands instead."
"I've heard of your power, dragon,"
the fisherman said, with a note of uncertainty.
"I'm not scared of it."
"You should be," I bared my teeth. "If you don't tell me what I want to know, you'll very soon regret it.
And if you don't answer my questions, I'll throw you to the eels," Phineas snarled.
"I'm dead either way. Why should I tell you anything?"
"It's your choice," I shrugged and grinned. "Just know you'll eventually tell me whether you want to or not. And I want to know why Cairo was coming to see you."
"The bear," he chuckled. "He was just a tool, nothing more."
"Oh, I agree he was a tool," I sneered. "But he was the sect's way into the kingdom, right? So how did you play into that?"
"I have certain abilities,"
the merman replied and pursed his lips.
"Didn't you feel them?"
"That needle spell?" I wondered. "What was it?"
"Needles," he laughed. "I have a specialty that few other mages have, which is why I was sent here."
"What is your specialty?" I prodded, and I had to rein in my inner dragon as we both started to lose our patience with his beating around the bush.
"Half the merpeople don't even know they have magic, so when I take it, they have no idea,"
the fisherman snorted.
"Once I take it, I can give it to someone else."
"Stealing magic from my people?"
Phineas bellowed, and I held out a hand to slow his enraged approach to the bound merman. "So you were trying to take my magic?" I scoffed. "It didn't even work."
"Yes, you had more than I was expecting,"
he muttered, and averted his gaze with frustration.
"If I'd been able to take it, you would be dead already."
"Yeah, well, you aren't taking shit from me," I shot back. "And it wasn't just me that took you down. Theo here knew exactly how to use his magic." I glanced over at the merman mage, who puffed out his chest with pride.
"He's one of the few who knows what they can do,"
the fisherman said, and rolled his eyes.
"The rest are clueless."
"Why do you hate your people so much?" Phineas demanded. "Merpeople have always stuck together, even when we're from different tribes."
"Because none of you have truly ever accepted me,"
the fisherman snarled.
"I've never truly been part of a tribe until the Green Glass sect found me."
"That's kind of what they do," I snorted, and the fisherman looked at me oddly. "You know, they find the person who feels like an outcast and bring them in. They teach you to be a traitor, but they don't teach you how much better it is to have a family."
"The sect is my family,"
he hissed, and tugged at his bindings again.
"And they'll kill you for taking me like this."
"No, they'll try to kill me because I'm in their way," I corrected him with a smirk. "They don't give a shit about you."
"You have no idea how much the sage does for each of us,"
he retorted, and leaned back in his chair.
"He's the most brilliant magical mind of our time."
"When he becomes wiser than the princess, then I might take that seriously," I laughed. "So what's his next move for trying to kill her? Assassins? Another portal?"
"I don't know," he muttered. "All I know is he's trying to capture her."
"Capture?" I echoed and frowned. "I thought he wanted to kill her. That's been his plan for months."
"Plans change,"
the fisherman sneered.
"You aren't the only one who's spoken to an oracle, dragon."
"So, she told him about Aliona's destiny," I murmured more to myself than to the merman. "And he thinks capturing her will be easier than trying to kill her."
"The sage has adjusted to her worth,"
the merman retorted.
"If she's truly strong enough to close the breach, then she's also strong enough to finish opening it."
"And why in the world would I want to help with that?"
Aliona spat out, and her amethyst eyes flashed with rage.
"The breach has caused nothing but pain and suffering for my people. The last thing I want is to open it."
"I'm sure with the right motivation you'd do just about anything. If your future husband was taken hostage, would you open the breach? Or one of your children?
Don't you dare speak of my family!
Aliona growled, and the room shook as power coursed through her body like lightning. Even the Duke's guards looked at each other with concern as the princess took long, even breaths to regain her composure. It seemed the sect had already worked out a few avenues to try to get the princess to help them, rather than continue to fight against them. But if they thought for a second she would open the breach for them, they were even stupider than I originally thought.
The soul bridges could make any of your lovers do reprehensible things,
Mariah said softly from my spiritual sea. What do you mean? I wondered.
The bond of the soul bridge is extremely strong,
she replied, between halting breaths.
If one of your lovers must choose between you and an unspeakable act, it will be more difficult than you realize. There is no way to know which one she would choose.
Well, damn. The soul bridges were badass 90% of the time, but that could be a bad situation. Okay, just so we're clear, you aren't any more likely to take me hostage and use me as a bargaining chip than you are to just capture Aliona and turn her to the dark side, I declared. So Olivier might as well come up with a whole new plan.
You speak his name!
The fisherman gasped. Yeah, he doesn't scare me, I snorted. You think saying his name is scary or what?
It's disrespectful once someone has earned a title such as the Sage, he snarled. You should learn how to address royalty.
Royalty? I repeated and laughed. He should learn how to become royalty instead of trying to steal it with unwitting accomplices like Cairo. You know, that guy was a big, dumb asshat.
The person didn't matter.
The fisherman shook his head and rolled his eyes.
As long as the person we chose was on the throne, we could have done whatever we wanted with the breach.
Like, let out all the demons? Great plan, by the way. Did anyone tell you they're demons and probably wouldn't actually do anything you told them to?
I'm sure,
the fisherman began, but his voice was cut short as a burst of black and green magic burst through one of the boarded-up windows. The wickedly colored orb passed over each of us and slammed into the merman with a thud. The force knocked his chair over backwards, and he let out a strangled cry and then laid still.
What the fuck?
I grumbled and paddled closer. The fisherman was dead.